During the last century, the deer population in Connecticut has risen from a few dozen animals to over 76,000 today. It's a remarkable success story, but one that has some serious downsides. Increasing cases of Lyme disease, increases in deer vehicle collisions, impacts on forest health, and the loss of millions of dollars worth of landscape plantings from browsing deer. This week on WFCR's Field Notes, naturalist Lori Sanders teams up with researchers in Connecticut who have launched an ambitious research project, which includes a new approach to reducing the deer population.
With what looks like a small TV antenna in his hand, Scott Williams sweeps his arm in a wide arc and then aims it in the direction with the strongest signal.
If we take a left here and walk straight in, we should come right up on her.
With Williams in the lead, Uma Ramakrishnan and I leave the wood road, following the signal as we thread our way through the forest. The radio transmitter is attached to a tranquilizer dart, which minutes ago, Williams shot into a female deer. She should be just a few hundred yards away. During the last 2 years, these researchers from the Connecticut Agricultural Experiment Station have been able to calculate the size of the deer herd in their study area by marking deer with ear tags and then recapturing them, either with a tranquilizing dart or on video with cameras hidden in different places in the forest. To learn about their movements, they've outfitted over 24 animals with radio transmitters and have another 8 wearing expensive collars that contain global positioning systems, otherwise known as GPS units. The GPS unit uses satellites to determine the deer's exact location every 2 hours. Ramakrishnan says they usually retrieve the GPS data by aiming a special remote control at the collar, which then automatically snaps open and falls to the ground. The only problem is the auto-release didn't work in some of the collars, and this deer is wearing one of them.
We've been trying to get these animals since April of this year. So we've got this one down, so it's quite an achievement, because we've got all this data, 1 year of data, running around in the woods. So we finally got it, hopefully.
The signal is getting more intense, and then Williams spots the doe lying below a stand of evergreens.
So I'm going to put this equipment down. I'm going to approach her very cautiously because we're never sure if the drug has taken full effect or not.
Her ears aren't moving, which Williams says is a good sign she's really out. Because the deer has no reflexes while she's sedated, Williams puts special drops in her eyes to prevent them from drying out. Then, while Ramakrishnan plucks some of the dozens of deer ticks off her ears to test for Lyme disease, Williams unscrews the GPS collar. It looks like a big dog collar with a small box housing the electronics. Ramakrishnan says the data from the other GPS collars has revealed that these deer have well-defined home ranges.
It's not like the movement is random. It's very predictable. The same animal goes to the same areas almost at similar times of day. What we found is they pretty much stay within this property during daylight hours, and it's only after dark, either at dawn or at dusk, that they head to people's backyards.
Even the movement to backyards is predictable, with the same deer going to the same yards night after night. By visiting someone's garden, a suburban deer can get the 5 to 15 pounds of food it needs in a matter of minutes. And that, she says, is part of the reason why deer densities can be so much greater in suburbia than in natural settings. It also helps explain why suburban deer have much smaller home ranges. And Ramakrishnan says those smaller home ranges make it easier for males to guard females during the breeding season.
Males are able to recognize when a female is ready to be mated, when she's ready for breeding. And basically, they're fertile for a 24-hour period. So what you see is the male mates with the female and then guards that female for anywhere from 24 to 48 hours, follows her around, keeps other males away, generally makes sure that she doesn't mate with any other male at that time.
Male guarding is key to another part of Ramakrishnan's study. For the last 2 years, she's been testing a new method of controlling deer population growth by sterilizing large male deer. The process is a lot like a vasectomy. A chemical is injected into the sperm duct and a scar forms, blocking the release of sperm. The buck, however, still produces lots of hormones.
They're interested in mating. We know that because we've seen treated males chasing after females last year and this year. And what we're hoping is that with these males running around and mating with females, most of the females are mating with sterile males. So in theory, there should be a drop in the population.
Although it's still too early to see how effective this technique is, Ramakrishnan says it seems promising. Unlike the contraceptives for does that have to be injected every year during the fall, this sterilization method appears to be long-lasting. It also offers another choice for controlling deer through non-lethal means. And that's especially valuable in densely populated areas where the houses are too close for hunting and in areas where people don't want hunters on their property. For Field Notes, I'm Laurie Sanders.
Field Notes is underwritten by the Northeast Utilities Foundation, which supports efforts to improve education and social and economic conditions in communities served by the Northeast Utilities System companies.